Hey, this is Gavin Wood, bringing Countdown back to 6 o'clock Sunday night. I'll recap the national top 10 from days gone by.
And you can dance.
And chat exclusively with the big names from the Countdown days. Glenn Shorrock. Kate Soprano. Ivor Davies from Ice House. And it all starts with Daryl Braithwaite.
It was pandemonium. You didn't really know how it all came together or whatever, but at ABC, they did it very, very well.
Sunday night from 6 on Gold 104.3, WSFM, the 80s on iHeartRadio, on Classic Hits 4KQ and 96FM. Gavin Wood's Countdown Podcast, proudly brought to you by Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.
This is Marcia Hines, and you're listening to Gavin Wood's Countdown Podcast.
Marcia Hines, AM, is an Australian-American soul singer, actress, and TV personality. She arrived in Australia at the age of 16, and the rest is music history. I'm honoured to chat with the queen of pop and soul, Marcia Hines. Hi, Marcia.
Gavin, how you doing?
I'm very well. It's great to talk to you.
Thank you.
I was just looking through your achievements. 14 studio albums, 1 live album, 9 compilation albums. You've been in the studio a lot.
Yeah. You know, the studio is good, but it's a really hard place to work in because, for one, nobody's applauding.
you're right.
Oh man, it's hard, yeah, you know. And but I do like it. I do like it very much. And as you noticed, just 1 live album, and that was hard. Boy, we're on tour for months and months, and the band was really tight. So we did a great live album. I'd like to do another one actually.
So that was the Marcia Hines Live Across Australia, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did you record songs in different places across Australia?
Absolutely.
All right. All your hits?
Yeah, man. It was really good. You know, it was great because, like I said, it's a luxury to play songs, for one, but to play them every night, you get better and better and better at it. And then to be able to record it, that's a luxury very rarely do you get.
Well, you've always had a hot band. It's always been really good to go to a Marcia Hines concert because that band is cooking, and so are you.
Oh, I love live. That's my thing, though. I love live performances. You know, it's just great because there's very little room for mistakes, but mistakes do happen. But you know, that's when you know how tight you all are. You all think the same, and you sort of like it might be a small train wreck, but you fix it. You know.
Yeah. So let's go right back in the Marcia Hines story, may we?
Okay. Yes, please.
Where were you born?
Boston, Massachusetts.
And you left there at an early age, am I correct?
Yeah, I left Boston to come to Sydney to do the Australian production of Hair. I actually auditioned in Boston, and my best friend was a girl called Linda Gaines, and she has a very famous sister who's now passed away called Donna Summer. And so Donna had already gone to Europe, and she was doing Porgy and Bess, and then she got a part in Hair. And then Linda was doing – she auditioned for the Boston production of Hair and said, oh, come on, let's do it together. And I said, nah, because if I do it, I'm still stuck in Boston, you know, and I want to do something. I want to go somewhere else, even if it's just New York. And lo and behold, the auditions came up for black kids to do the parts that were specifically for black Americans in the Australian production of Hair. And it was Sandra McKenzie and Jim Sharman who found me. And then Harry Miller, because I was underage, Harry Miller became my legal guardian until I was 21.
That's right. Yeah, at 16, you had to have a legal guardian, didn't you?
Yeah, sure did, yeah.
Thank goodness and thank God for Harry M. Miller, huh?
Good old Harry. Love that man.
You are now an official Australian citizen, which is exciting.
I am.
That must have been a good day.
It was a great day. It actually all happened in Melbourne, too. So I went down to Port Phillip, I want to say Port Phillip, or it was somewhere in Melbourne, and it was a great big celebration, quite a few. And I think Jim Owen became an Australian citizen with me. We did it together.
Jim Owen, fantastic.
Yeah.
I was speaking to Leo Sayer, and he did his in Canberra with Kevin Rudd.
He's on, that guy. He's a great person to have as an Australian citizen.
It's the continuation of the Countdown audience, really, when you think about it, you know.
Mm-hmm. You bet it was. We all hung out. And we all sort of had dinner together and shared jokes. And I love JPY, you know, because we're really close from Superstar. And so
he's got a great sense of humor, hasn't he? He's
Wicked.
A funny man.
No, yeah. No, but Wicked. But no, so has Russell Morris. They don't stop, you know. The guys just don't stop. They were wonderful to be around, just absolutely wonderful. And they take such good care of me. They're such gentlemen. They're great guys.
Three-time Queen of Pop and twice Countdown Female Artist of the Year. The other big award, of course, is the Member of the Order of Australia. Now,
yeah, how cool is that?
A young 16-year-old girl coming from Boston, you would never think that, would you?
No, to be honest, I didn't even know what the that award was, and you know, until I got to know Australia and I saw people receiving it. But that's just an incredible thing for me, and I'm very grateful for it. Very, very grateful for it. I'm very proud.
Well, I was very proud of you because I got to see you on television before I left for the States. Back in 2007, you were a judge on Australian Idol. And, man, you did such a great job.
Thank you.
You were the concrete in that judging panel, I can tell you.
Well, you know, look, I love that gig, Gavin. But, you know, I'll tell you something. There but for the grace of God go I. All those kids just wanted to do what I do for a living. They just want to sing. So why be mean to them? You know, some of them are far more talented than others, you know what I mean? And that always sort of, you know, the cream always rises to the top. But I remember seeing Guy Sebastian thinking to myself, oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Now this is something very special,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, you can tell.
And then, yeah, you sure can. And also, you know, they're getting all this information being plucked out of obscurity and thrown on television in front of, you know, Australia. And you would give them little bits of advice and you could see the ones who would take it and then apply it. And they would just skyrocket. You know, it's an amazing thing to watch.
Yeah.
It's just, I love the gig, Gavin. I really did.
And with all your advice through that journey, you watch them grow into these incredible performers, don't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure you do.
Very,
you know?
Satisfying.
And I mean, very, very satisfying, you know. And I'd say to them, look, you know, you've got more publicity. You have had more publicity than Michael Jackson could pay for. Get out there and knock on doors. Mm. Make people remember who you are. Because as soon as the next season happens, people forget, you know.
Yeah, they do. And look, that's the sad part about it. And artists, artists with your repertoire and history, you know, you've been on more stages, you know, three or four or five times all around Australia, you know, and doing the live stuff is so important to be a well-rounded performer.
That's what it's about. You know, that's what it's about. I mean, studio's great and all that stuff, but you got to get your butt on stage and work, you know, and singers say to me, oh, I want to be a singer. What do I do? And I say, find a band that needs a singer and bother them until they say, yeah. You know, just bother them. Bother them. And if they say no, find another a band that needs a singer. You know what I mean? You got to knock on doors and you got to make yourself known to your people, the people who are around you. Back in the day, we had bands who would play in garages and all that stuff. You remember, Gavin? So,
I do.
You know,
I was in them. Yeah.
There you go. Yeah, there you go. And you just sort of say, look, you know, that you guys sound great. Do you need a band? No, excuse me. Do you need a singer? Nah, get out of here. So you try the next one that you hear in the neighborhood, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, that's so true. So, being inducted into the ARIA Hall of Fame back in 2007, man, that is probably the greatest accolade you could have in this current time.
Yeah, you know, to be acknowledged by your peers is pretty cool, you know. And look, Gavin, I'll be honest. Anybody who says awards are BS, they're not, because they've probably never had one. You know, I've always been very, very proud of anything that I achieve. And, you know, like you try and do the best that you can in whatever you do. And if you get an award, great, you know. And so I just take it. You know, I just take it and say thank you very much.
Well, you know, it's nice to dust them and it's nice to look at them and realize that you've done something with your
life. That's my life. That's some of my life. So far, so good. You know, I'm far from finished, but, you know, you never know. You never know.
Now, the biggest achievement, I believe, in your life would be being the mother to Denny.
Yeah, you betcha. My daughter is now living in Thailand. So she's in Bangkok with her husband, and they've been there for about 3 years. And it's funny, just before I spoke to you, we WhatsApped. And so after I speak to you, I will have a long conversation with my child. And I miss her, you know. I miss her because of all the climate of the world at the moment, and also she's so far away. Usually I'm there, but I can't get there. So.
Well, the interesting thing about Denny is that when you gave birth to Denny, you were doing, what was it, Hair or Jesus Christ Superstar?
I was on stage for Hair.
9 days later, you were back on stage. You're amazing.
Yeah. Well, you know, like, you know, you're kind of pretty bulletproof at 17. Well. And, you know, and I took those days off. And a couple of the other girls in the show had children, too. And nobody took off much time.
Right.
So, you know, and we were all young and, you know, and we had enough money to have people to help us with our kids and stuff like that. Okay. So if not our partners, you know, we could always get a nanny or something. You know?
Right.
Tobin Brothers Funerals, a family-owned business since 1934. Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.
This is Marcia Hines, and you're listening to Gavin Wood's Countdown Podcast.
And you've also got a couple of famous cousins as well. Former U.S. Secretary of State Colin Powell.
The one and only, yeah.
And singer Grace Jones.
Yeah, yeah.
Tell me about those connections.
Oh, well, it's a Jamaican connection. I was born in Boston, but my parents were born in Kingston, Jamaica. Well, I should say, okay. Westmoreland, Jamaica. And so my cousin Grace, I was told about by my cousin who lives in Washington, D.C., and I went and visited Donna, and she said, oh, you know, we've got some famous cousins. I said, oh, get out of town. She said, yeah. And so she's the one who does the family tree stuff.
Okay. Yeah.
And she told me about Colin, and she told me about Grace. And I've met Grace, and I met Grace's brother. Grace's brother is a really famous, or I should say, terribly popular priest in Los Angeles. And I remember going to the church and speaking to him, and he said, oh, yeah, yeah, you favor the family, which means you look like somebody in the family. So that was nice, too, you know.
Oh,
and
cool.
And Denny hung out with Grace the last time she was here, I think, yeah.
She was a wild child. I remember Grace on Countdown. What a
always has been and always will be, yeah.
What an aura that woman had.
A tiny little thing, too. That's what blows me. Everybody thinks she's like 6'7", but she's tiny. You know, she's just
the 10-inch heels.
Yeah, that's the one.
Now, you're a lucky girl. You went to Woodstock.
I did.
Tell me about it, because that was a long walk. That was a long walk into the farm.
So, okay, I'll tell you the whole story. So it was on the radio station in Boston on WBCN, which is like the really hip radio station. I still listen to it through an app called TuneIn, you know, so you can listen to radio stations. Oh, yeah, it's good, isn't it? So they kept talking about this huge concert that was going to happen in Woodstock, you know, up in New York. And I kept saying to my ma, you know, I'd really like to see that. She'd say, over my dead body. And she had said, you're not going. And so lo and behold, I was the babysitter for a lady on our street. And she wanted to go. And she said to my mom, can Marsha babysit Honoré if I go up to Woodstock? I'll take Marsha. My mother said, oh, sure. So I was gone. All right. So I was gone. And we got there, and we got to the gate, and we tried to pay. And the guy said, look, I've lost count. Just keep your money and just go on in.
Gee.
That's how many people had turned up. And so we got there, and she found the campsite for us and all that. Not near the stage, near enough to the stage. And then Honoré, right. The little girl hated it. She said, oh, Marsha, we've got to go back to Boston. I said, well, see ya. And so I stayed, man. I stayed. And it's funny because I ran into a girl that I used to go to summer camp with. Lisa and I hung out. And then, you know, I listened to all the music that happened. And, you know, the most amazing thing about all that, Gavin, is nobody was hurt or, you know, there were no fights.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that was just such a great time, that whole hippie movement.
It was the time of peace and love.
You know, it was great. And so the concert ended. I got rained on. I was filthy. And as I was walking towards the gates, somebody called my name, said, Marsha. And it was somebody on my street. And they said, you want to ride home? Really? I went, yeah. My brother.
Hell yes.
Yeah, dig it. My brother had gone too. He hated it. So he went to my aunt's house in New York and hung with her. Mm. And then I just stayed by myself, and I was safe. I was fed. You know, I was watered. It was fantastic. You know it was. But nobody knew, Gavin.
Yeah.
Nobody knew it was going to be what it turned out to be.
Yeah, of course.
It was just a summer concert, but nobody knew it was going to turn out to be a historical, you know, musical concert.
Mm,
yeah.
Of course. Any highlights from the concert that you remember?
Yeah, I remember seeing Sly and the Family Stone, because I was about to go to sleep and they started screaming, hey, get on up and dance to the music. I remember that. And then I remember them calling Jimi Hendrix because I couldn't find him. Arlo Guthrie. He was nice. He was nice. He was another nighttime performer. I really liked Country Joe and the Fish. Everybody was really good, and everybody was so well-behaved and so mellow, you know, that was the day,
right.
That those were the days of being mellow and, you know, and community-minded, you know.
Mm. Yeah, it was a simpler time.
Yes, it was.
Now, explain these two names to me.
Mm-hmm.
Shanti Renee and Monica Hindmarsh.
Okay, so Shanti Renee, that was the name I thought I might use as a singer in Boston. And then somebody said to me, what's wrong with Marsha Hines? I said, nothing. They said, why don't you just use... I went, okay. You know,
What were you thinking? Shanti Renee, that's a horrible name.
Well, yeah. Well, you're right, you know, and I'll agree with you now. But at that point in time, I thought it sounded artistic. So
you thought it was cool.
Yeah, I thought it was artistic and cool. And then Monica Hindmarsh, we used to do gigs, and we didn't want people to know it was me, Marsha Hines, and my band. And so we were in Melbourne, and there was, I think it's still there, an insurance company called Hindmarsh. And so we put Monica in the front of it, and we'd say Monica Hindmarsh and the Permanent Building Society band. And strangely enough, people would sort of twig, and they'd all come and see the gig, you know. So it was good, you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, well. It pays to be creative in all areas.
That's what my manager still calls me, Mon, which is from Monica.
Does he?
Peter does. He says, hey, Mon.
Peter calls you Mon.
He does.
Oh, that's great.
Isn't it good?
Yeah. I'll call you Mon from now
on,
too.
You're more than welcome.
Thank you, Marsha.
You're welcome.
Looking at your career, you know, in total, what really has been, you know, some of the highlights for you?
You know, I'm going to be really honest. Like, each day I wake up, I say I'm very grateful for everything that's happened to me, and I'm quite aware of what an amazing career I'm having. You know, I'm quite aware. You know, when I won Queen of Pop, that was like an epiphany for me that Australia had accepted me as one of their own, and because I'd already accepted them as my family, you know. And then when I won Queen of Pop, because back in the day, Gavin, as you know, Queen of Pop, you had to buy the TV Week magazine, fill out the coupon, you know, and mail it. And put a stamp on it and mail it. Do you know what I mean? And so those kind of things mean a lot when you know that the general public are that on your side and are so pleased at what you're putting out in the music industry, you know. So I was stoked. I was stoked every time I got it, you know. And, look. I've had some incredible gigs, you know, and I just hope they keep coming because, you know, I don't plan to retire. I plan to sing until I, never
retire. Now, see, you had it from the get-go. Just before you came to Australia, were you? How did you know you had a beautiful voice?
Well, I was a singer. I've been a singer since I can ever remember. I used to remember sitting in front of the little wooden box radio that, you know, sort of like an old big speaker, you know, and listening to what was happening in the top, you know, like the top 100. And I was about maybe 4 or 5 then, just intrigued with music. And I actually thought people sat inside that box and played the instruments. I thought they lived in there, you know. But, and then choir, you know. Most black kids in America, you get taught to sing in church. And my godmother was the lead singer in her church. I was Church of England. She was Baptist. And because she was blind, I used to take her to church. And kids weren't allowed in the choir box, but because Flo was blind and the head of the choir, they used to allow me to sit there. So I just sit there and listen to everybody's chops, you know?
That's a talent, being blind and head of the choir.
Yeah, and a mean piano player.
Wow.
Yeah, mean.
How good is that?
Yeah, she was great. She was a wonderful godmother. You know, she was just, and very influential, obviously, in my musical career, yeah.
Oh, she would have loved you.
Yeah, and unfortunately, she passed away way before she found out how well I'd done. But she always encouraged me and said, you know, it's a beautiful thing. But it was always, she encouraged me to sing in church, yeah.
Well, when you arrived in Australia at 16, you just blew everybody away.
Oh, cool. Yeah, it was scary, got to be honest. It was a little bit scary, but it was really quite exciting, too.
Well, the good thing, I suppose, is you came into an ensemble,
yes.
So you had a family around you.
Well said.
Which helped you and nurtured you.
Well said, you know. Well said. I was probably a serious pain in the proverbial, but I didn't know I was. You know, 16 years old, you know, you're wide-eyed, you know nothing. I knew nothing. But walking into a show like that, because I'd already seen it in Boston, you know, and I said to my mother, oh, I won't be doing the nude scene. She said, okay, you do what you want to do. But I said, no, I won't be doing that. And so I trained for the show, you know, and then I got on stage. And then after watching the nude scene and realizing it wasn't vulgar, it was a way to protest and to say what we believed in, that the Vietnam War was not. It was wrong now and it was wrong then, you know, and it wasn't a problem, you know. And also, you know, people think of a nude scene now, Gavin, and it's, you know, butt naked with floodlights. But nude scene in here was really, really well.
Tastefully stage lighting.
And thank you very much. Couldn't have said it by myself. Yeah.
Well, the Vietnam War, I was, you know, of an age, and I got called up, you know, in the conscription here. And I was singing in a band, and, you know, and I had a girlfriend and everything like that. So I go in, and the guy looks at my feet, and I've got high insteps on my feet. And he said, oh, you won't be marching in the jungle with those feet, son. He said, go and do the hearing test. So I walked in, and he said, is that Gavin? I said, yes. He said, I'm Peter Street. I went to school with you in Roma.
Oh, no.
And I said, you're kidding. He said, can you hear this sound? I said, yeah. He said, no, you can't hear that sound. So I failed the physical and I was happy. But I got to tell you, I got some mates that are still broken from that bloody war.
I mean, broken and not appreciated. That's what gives me the shit. Oops.
Yeah, no, you can say whatever you like. I'm angry too.
Excuse me. You know, and I knew some guys who came home who will never be the same, you know. And but, you know, like just to be appreciated, that's what it's about, just to be. And maybe the older, you know, we get, the more we will appreciate. But I just think it's so important to say to anybody, you know, thank you for your service. You know, just thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you.
Well, Normie Rowe, you know, dear Normie. Yeah. He got pulled up by a traffic policeman, and he said, oh, Normie, he said, is that your birthday? And he goes, yes. He said, that's the same as mine. He said, I was never called up for Vietnam.
Wow.
So Normie was the Elvis Presley of Australia. Try and make it look cool.
Yes, he was.
You know?
Yes, he was. Yeah, he was. Normie's a terrible. Good guy, too.
Isn't he a great guy? Well, everybody's in the industry, you know, because it's tougher here in Australia. Well, it's tougher in America, as you know, but it's also tough here in Australia because, you know, I love what John Farnham does. You know, he goes away for 3 or 4 years, does no interviews, and all of a sudden comes back with an album, does all these interviews, and then goes away again, you know, and a tour.
And with the
and
voice,
goes away.
With the voice of doom, you know, that guy can sing. Yeah. That guy can sing like no other. You know what I mean?
He's like you. He can sing the phone book.
Oh, man, that guy can sing. I'm such a fan of John's, you know. And I think that's kind of good, you know. I remember when I stopped recording for a while because of a recording litigation, Peter Ricks, my manager, said to me, look, we got nothing to say. Just sit still, you know, just sit still for a while. And then I sat still and came back stronger, which was really good. And smart of a manager, too. You know, he's been my manager for my whole career. So,
well, Peter Ricks is one of the good guys.
Yes, he is. I know that. I know. He's my brother.
Now, good. Mm-hmm. And he's half my brother.
There you
now,
go.
And can I say, I've heard Carole King's version, I've heard James Taylor's version, but your version of Fire and Rain still knocks me out.
Man, you know, it's still my favorite song. It's the weirdest thing, you know. I still don't get tired of singing it. I just don't because I remember the little girl who sang it, you know. I remember. And the reason I chose that song as the first song I ever recorded is when I left Boston, listening to that radio station in Boston, WBCN, it was a huge hit, you know. So I listened to it. And I think I even bought the vinyl and played it to death and, you know, drove everybody crazy in my house, as I usually do when I like something. Right. And then I got to Sydney and I got to my accommodation in Sydney and there was a little like stereo system in my room and I turned on the radio and Fire and Rain came on the radio and I went, wow, if I ever get a chance to record anything, I'm going to record. And of course, I had a huge crush on James Taylor.
Yes.
Huge crush.
Wasn't it? He was cool.
Yeah,
wasn't
he still
Taylor?
Is. He's still. Yeah. At one point, I think it might have been last year, Gavin, he and Bob Dylan had the number one albums in America.
Yeah, that's so good.
Uh-huh.
Because you know, all their fans who grew up with them have got all the money, and now they can go out and buy the albums and really enjoy them.
Yeah, really enjoy them and introduce, you know, a younger generation to some really good music.
Tobin Brothers Funerals. Visit tobinbrothers.com.au. Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.
This is Marsha Hines, and you're listening to Gavin Wood's Countdown Podcast.
There's nothing better than the 3.5 minute radio song, because it's got, you know, a couple of verses, a chorus, a verse and a chorus. Mm-hmm. There's a structure there. Mm-hmm. But I don't know, and, you know, I love Taylor Swift. It's a great message that she gives out, mm-hmm. and she's great to her fans. But I don't know in 10 years whether you'd be still singing any of her songs.
Well, let's see. I plan to be here. You too, right?
Okay, well, in 10,
we'll talk about
10
it.
Years' time, we'll have a coffee.
Yeah, don't you know? But I agree with you, you know, like, but then I'm thinking, are we thinking like older people because it isn't part of our DNA generation. So, you know, when we were coming up, man, people thought we were crazy. You know, older people thought, what is that rock and roll? What is that psychedelic? What is that? That's not music. So, you know, I try. I listen to a radio station out of L.A. called KJLH. And so that's a black radio station. I try and listen to it so I can find out what's going on with.
That's Stevie Wonder's radio station.
You know what? Check this out. This last weekend I was listening to KJLH, and I'm walking around my house thinking, oh, and I hear this guy, and I think, gee, he sounds incredibly intelligent. And I know his vowels, the way he's speaking. It was Stevie. He called up the radio station, spoke for 15 minutes, Gavin.
Oh, that's insane.
It was
that's too cool.
Yeah, it's too cool. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And that's a great radio station. They play some great songs. And I found I was going to that radio station more than K-Earth. There's a lot of Mexican stations now in L.A.
Yeah.
Kind of taken over. But, yeah, KJLH is one of my favorite.
Yeah, the people who are listening to us, they should check it out because it's worth listening to. I mean, Then on Sunday, which is Monday, they play a lot of church music. So I get to hear what's happening in church music as well. So.
Yes, they do.
Yeah, they do.
Yes, they do. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. You're right on there.
Thank you.
Brilliant. Now, Marsha, it's been an absolute pleasure tap dancing through your incredible career. And many, 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 many more. Now, we end the podcast with the top 10 questions. Mm-hmm. Well, it is countdown after
Don't
all.
Don't you know?
So let's start off with number 10 on the countdown.
Okay.
What have you learned, and what would you pass on to a young, hopeful musician?
What I've learned is patience. And what I've learned also is to listen to the people who are around you that mean you well. Because as a performer, you don't know everything. You think you do. But you have to have a bit of a think tank around you, and it's important to listen, and it's important to sit still and listen.
Mm.
Patience.
Take it all in.
That's it, patience.
Question number 9, what's the best show that you have done?
Oh, I'd have to say the best show I've ever done in my life is Jesus Christ Superstar, because of the people who were in it and the score. I'd sit by the side of the stage and listen to John English and Trevor White and John Paul Young and Stevie, you know. I remember sitting in the audience thinking, holy, what is this? And saying to Harry, I was still in hair. And I said, Harry, can I just do wardrobe or something in this show? I just need to listen to the music. He said, nah. But I have to say, Jesus Christ Superstar, getting the gig, you know, getting that gig, that was fine score. What a beautiful score.
I wore out 3 copies of that cast album.
There you go.
It was so good.
Special.
Number 8 on the countdown, if you could change anything about the music industry, what would you do?
Oh, that's a big question. What would I do if I could change anything about the music industry? I would like to change it so that albums could come back the way when we grew up. So, you know, you'd live to get the album, go to the record store and pick up the album, and then have that tangible piece of cardboard with everybody's face on it. You could read who produced it and what musicians. That's what I would change if I could.
All the liner notes.
Yes, man. Yeah.
Question number 7 in the countdown. What is the most trouble that you've ever gotten into? Now, you don't have to answer this.
Oh, no, I can answer it. You know, unfortunately, people call me a goody, Miss Goody Two-Shoes because, you know, most of my career, my mother was alive. And so, and I, not only was I a mother myself, I had a mother to answer to and Peter Ricks. So, you know, I'm pretty good like that. You know, I haven't gotten into any trouble where the police have ever been called or anything like that. So, yeah, I'm a bit of a Miss Goody Two-Shoes, but I'm not ashamed of that. That's a good thing. I don't like trouble.
No, we love that. Question number six, and I think you've answered this before. What's your favorite song to perform?
Fire and Rain by James Taylor.
Yeah. Question number five. Name your three dinner guests, dead or alive. You and three other people.
Me and three other people. Oh, look, I'd have to say me, my mum, my godmother, and maybe Nelson Mandela, something like that. I'd like to hear what he's got to say about the world as it is now.
Oh, that would be a great dinner. I'd love to be a fly on the wall there.
Yeah, yeah.
That would be great. Question number four. If you could open up a show for any artist, who would it be?
Oh, you mean if I... Oh, right. Sting.
Yeah, he's pretty remarkable, isn't
he?
When you think he came from a bass player who could really sing nice in The Police and then got international fame, and what he's gone into now with all his songwriting, it's quite
brilliant.
He's
pretty incredible, and he was a school teacher.
Oh, well, that's where he gets it from.
Yeah, he's a bright man, but I really love his music because it moves, and it moves with the times, and I think that's really good. And yeah, I'm a huge fan of Sting's, yeah.
Question number three on the countdown. What was the effect of Countdown to your career?
I'd have to say almost everything. You know, back in the day, Countdown meant the general public could hear what you had newly recorded, you know. And also, you know, it meant a lot to me because I got to hang with all the guys and the girls who were performing on the show. And it meant a lot to me in my career because I learned how to deal with a camera. Because I remember I was singing one day in Countdown. I was so shy, and my eyes were always closed. And the cameraman said, "Why do you close your eyes all the time, Marsh? You got such beautiful eyes." Well, Gavin, since then I've never closed them. So.
Oh, you take a compliment.
Yeah,
well,
I do.
That's
you know,
good.
Yeah. Like I said, you got to listen.
Absolutely. Yeah. And Molly, of course, Molly just adored you and still
Molly,
does.
I adore Molly. Molly, you know, because, I mean, people, they got to realize if it wasn't for Molly, most of us wouldn't have seen the light of day. He put the good fight in for all of us, you know. And his passion has been and always has been music, you know, and Molly's the bomb.
Next, Molly with Humdrum.
Do yourself a favor. Take the stress away from moving home. Contact whitegovemover.com.au.
Hi, this is Ian Malinogram with my dear, dear friend Gavin Wood with his Countdown podcast. Marsha Hines is one of my dearest, dearest friends, and I've admired her for all the time, and she never changes. She's always been a nice, honest person, and what she did with her daughter and all that, that was unbelievable. And I think everyone admires Marsha Hines and really loves her talent.
If you're thinking of moving house, do yourself a favour. The White Glove Mover can do the hard work. Call 139448. Now, only two more questions to go on the Countdown top 10. Mm-hmm. Question number two, what have you learned over your musical journey?
What I've learned over my musical journey is camaraderie. You know, I love the camaraderie that happens in a band situation. You know, like when you're traveling and you put up with each other and you learn to laughter is. My mother used to say, "No fools, no fun." You know, and so all these the guys, all they do is laugh and make me laugh, and you know, and I try and be funny, and I just think that kind of camaraderie. And just recently, I did some recording with Russell Crowe last week, to be honest, and he's got a studio up at his place at Nana Glen, and quite a few of the musicians were there. We were all recording, and we all hung out and played tennis and ate and were fed and taken care of for a few days. And I just thought to myself, wow, does life get better than this, you know?
Yeah, hanging with your mates.
Just hanging with my mates, you know. And then, and also, you know, like doing physical things like playing tennis and go for a little bit of a walk and having a bit of a chat. And then, you know, and then sitting around a dinner table all together and talking. It was wonderful, absolutely wonderful. I thought to myself, God, I'm so, so lucky and so blessed, yeah.
Russell loves his music.
Oh, man, does he what? And he's a good writer, too. He's a great writer. You know, the guy is a very, very layered human being, and he's a good man.
I remember I did the voiceovers for the Australian Film Industry Awards, and I just came back from the States that morning. I had a sleep, and then I had to go and do rehearsals, and Russell was the compere.
Oh, wow.
And it was just after he threw the telephone.
Oh, okay.
Right? Yeah. So I was a bit nervous, and so I went up to Russell and said, Hi Russell, I'm Gavin, I'm the voiceover guy, da 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 da. Look, before you come on stage, there's going to be 3 sponsor credits, 30 seconds in length, and then there'll be a follow spot side stage. You walk into that spot and then walk up to the lectern and then you can start. And I turned and walked away and he said, Gavin? And I've gone, oh no. And I've turned around and said, yes, Russell? And he said, could you say that to me again? I said, of course. He was so professional and so good. It was brilliant to work with him.
Yeah, oh, look, you know, I don't know if you've seen his latest movie. It's called Unhinged.
No, I want to. Desperately want to.
You do?
Yeah.
Well, maybe you mightn't, but it's pretty frightening. Yeah. It's probably one of the best things I've seen him
wow.
do, yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, he is professional, you know, in all that he does, you know. And it's funny because he always knows exactly what he wants from me singing-wise, and I kind of like that because a lot of people will get me in the studio and go, oh, you go for it and do what you want to do. But Russell will say, this is what I want you to do, blah, 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 blah. So sometimes for a singer, that's what you want. You want some direction.
Of course. We've come to the number one question in the countdown top 10, and it's a big one.
Okay.
Who inspired you to make music?
I'd have to say my godmother, you know. And Boston was a really, when I was coming up, Boston was a really musical city. So I'd see Buddy Rich play, and I'd see my neighbors were Jay Giles and the Blues. They called themselves the Jay Giles and the Blues Band. And I used to hang with them, and they used to play with B.B. King. And I'd just go everywhere I could to hear music. And so I'd say my godmother on the church level. And then, you know, I came up at a great time because music was really, I love Led Zeppelin and I love all, I love Cream and I love Sly and, you know, and I love all the Motown stuff. So I was highly influenced. And then during the summer months, Gavin, we'd have like these talent shows. And so we'd all go and learn a song and then sing one of the songs in the talent show. So, you know, it was always kind of in me to perform, but I never expected it. I never expected anything great. That's a great saying. You should expect nothing, and then whatever comes is a good thing.
Well, what a career you've had, my
thank
dear.
You.
I love you so
oh, thank
much.
Thank you. So nice
I
to talk to you, Gavin, really.
And I love your music, and I love, you know, how we all love you, and
thank you.
And it's just amazing to talk to you, and thank you for your time today. I really appreciate it.
I enjoyed it immensely as well. You take good care.
Tobin Brothers Funerals, a family-owned business since 1934. Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.